All right. Hey, welcome to the Bear Fruit Show. And we have a special guest with us today, Michael Reese. Thank you for being here, Michael.
Man, I'm excited. How you doing, bro?
Good, man. Good. I'm excited for you to be here. So a little bit about Michael. So Michael loves helping people grow as an author and bestseller of Miracle Morning for Real Estate Agents, Inside Sales, Predictability, Digital President. He co-founded NAEA with National Association of Expert Advisors, which him and his partner grew to 10 million. And then when he's not running ultra marathons, coaching football, or being a dad to his three boys and daughter, you can find him at the lake or at the beach, living life by strategy. So, Michael, tell me what living life by strategy means. I want to know.
Man, life by strategy is coming to the conclusion that it's finding the courage. I think it's accelerating your consciousness to find the courage that your current circumstances are actually in your control. And that some of your decisions of everything you have done have gotten you to where you are, and that you actually have the ability as an agent to act and make choices that will take you wherever you want to go in your future. And so if you have the right mental models, belief systems, mindset, life by strategy is about finding the drive and the motivation to continue to push forward when there's no other reason to push forward because you have a bigger purpose.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good. There's a lot I feel like you could break down into that, all of what you said, and we will. So I'm excited to have you on here, Michael. And where are you at right now? I know you kind of bounce around different places. Where are you at?
I'm in Puerto Rico right now.
Nice, nice. How long have you been in Puerto Rico? For a little while, right? Living life by strategy.
Yep, it's probably 2.5 years.
Nice, nice. Has it been a good move? I know there's people who, you know, sometimes most people I hear, they love it, but what about you? Is that a good move for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, if you're talking about, first of all, I think that I don't know if that statement would be true, so I'm retracting, but it's been a good move for me for sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot of great people, great opportunities, beautiful place, beautiful weather in the Caribbean. So yeah, it's been a great move.
Nice. Nice. Good, 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 good. So tell me, so the Bear Fruit Show, what it's all about is, you know, I had a mentor once tell me, like, go find somebody with fruit on the tree and learn from them and let their ceiling be your floor. And so that's what I've tried to do in every aspect of my life. And I try to, you know, for our listeners, I try to bring people on who I feel like I've done the same thing or are actually doing it right now. And so, you know, who are some of the people that you have sought out in your journey to creating the success that you've created?
Man, I think the success in the beginning was, just pure entrepreneurship. And so I gravitated to any entrepreneur that had control and, again, the courage to try to do something other than what was, I read a newsletter once from a gentleman by Dan Kennedy, who's one of those people. And it talked about a guy that he had met who worked at a steel mill, and he was getting interviewed, and he had been there 30 years. And the interviewer asked the question, so why did you decide to, work here for 30 years? And he said, because I saw an ad in the newspaper. And, to have your 30 years of your life, be dictated by somebody's ad in a newspaper is not very strategic. And so, for me, I think in the beginning, I learned the skill sets due to my parents not giving me, my parents could provide it probably, instead, like my friends would have 6 pairs of new jeans. I got 2, my friends would get 3 pairs of shoes. I had 1, and so it was just that constant, evolution of how things just worked in my life, right? Like the way that things worked in my life was, this is what you got. And, if you can either complain about it or you can go, if you want more, you're going to have to go work for it. And so I had a paper route, when I was growing up, and that paper route taught me, I had to get up real early in the morning. So I think I got my paper route in like 7th grade when I was 11. And okay. So, you know, when I first got it for about 6 months, you had to deliver 2 papers a day. So I had to be out of my house and there was no availability for my neighborhood. So on the bus riding home from school one day, a kid named Jimmy Purcell, he had just got the paper out in Shelter Creek. So I wanted a paper out. So I had heard him on the bus talking about it. So I went home. I don't know if he gave me the phone number. I don't remember exactly the details. I just know that I pursued my own paper out. And I got on the phone with the Lawton Constitution and got on this phone with this guy named Bernie. And I persuaded him that my mom was going to let me have the paper out. And that he said, well, we only have Kingsbrier, because a high school football quarterback had 3 neighborhoods and would go around in his red Camaro and throw the papers out his window. And so everybody knew this guy. You would see him coming. And dude, he was like, you know, he was just making all the money, running 3 routes. So when he went to college, he lost all 3 neighborhoods, but they didn't want to give it to one person. And so to get to that other paper out, I had to go out on a main 2-way street with no street lights. And I had to go all the way down, probably a 1/2 mile pitch dark, where, you know, you'd hear coyotes and things in the woods and stuff. So I had to go down pitch black in the country to get to the entrance of the next paper out neighborhood. And, you know, the first time I did it, you know, I mean, I was scared. I got to the point where, you know, I was used to walking that road in the middle of the night.
Sure. And, yeah. But
I had to do it in the rain, you know, when it rained and it's Sunday. So on Sundays, the paper's like this big, you know, you get a stack of papers like this, but on Sundays you get literally like 4 stacks this big. And, they're harder to roll. You know, there's just a lot of different things that make it difficult on a Sunday paper. And then if it's Sunday and it rains, it's even that more hard. But you have to collect and you get tips. And so I learned all those things. But when I first started, I had to do it in the morning and I had to do it in the afternoon, because they had an AM paper and a PM paper. And that AM paper out, dude, I had to put this big bag on and ride a bike. And, you know, and so there's a lot of things. I was always very athletic, but, you know, in theory, I got up 7 days a week and walked a mile or ran a mile to get to the entrance of the neighborhood. I did the paper out every day. So, you know,
were you walking when you did this?
Yeah.
Dang. So you weren't.
Yeah, but I would have to hold all these papers. So I had like this bag, and I did it every single day. And then my school, you know, my school was probably, I don't know, you know, there was a lot of days where I had to walk home from football practice, and I'm going to guess one day I'll measure it, but it was probably 5 miles, you know, to get home from school. And so there was just times where my mom couldn't pick me up from football and I'd have to walk home. And so all of that. And I know for a fact, dude, like those little things that I would ask my kids to do now would be like, I mean, I don't even know how they would respond. You know, I don't know my same age. He would never, you know, walk out this neighborhood, go that far. And so I just learned a lot of independence and, you know, a lot of things the hard way. But one thing that I learned was, you know, if I wanted it, I was going to have to work for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, that's amazing. Just that kind of started your entrepreneurship, learning how to be uncomfortable and get up in the morning and talk to people you didn't know and all of that. So I think that, you know, started all the way back in seventh grade, you know, walking a paper route. So that's,
yeah,
I love well, that. I had, story,
so my stepbrother's here, and last year a family member came here and did some video work for me. And last night I was in my office at 9 o'clock, and he had went down to the beach about 7 o'clock. He was, you know, to just look at the beach, and he came back, and, you know, he's here. He had left a job that, you know, he worked in a car dealership for 19 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he ran the dealership, and he said to me when he came back in from the beach at 9 o'clock, he was like, dude, you're still in here, you know, and I was still at my desk, you know, and when he woke up this morning, I was gone. So he went to the gym. He goes to CrossFit every morning, but when he got up to go to the gym this morning,
you were gone.
I was gone. And so when he was coming back, you know, he caught me on my run out the door. And so just little stuff like that, man, just that, you know, I don't know how you create drive, but what I do know is yesterday I was trying to answer this question, and I shared this with one of my business partners because I was thinking about this book that I'm writing for my kids, and I was trying to unpack this philosophy. And after going through it, I was thinking about my sons reading it. And I was trying to really think about like this concept, kind of like what we're talking about. And I was like, man, you know, they wouldn't really listen to it if I said it that way. They wouldn't listen to it if I said it that way. And I was trying to get to the principle, like, what's the principle? What's the principle? And I was putting something right here and I was about to sit down and I was like, that's what it is. And what it was what I was willing to sacrifice. So mm-hmm. when there was anything that I wanted, I got really clear on the sacrifice to get it. And so like, because what he had asked me, you know, I had to apply it to why I was at my desk at 9.
Yeah.
I don't have to be sitting here and doing, but it,
no, no, but you don't.
Yeah. But the sacrifice and the meaning and the purpose that is to my life and the things that I'm working on, have such a bigger purpose that I didn't even, you know, I mean, I knew it was 9 o'clock, but I mean, there wasn't anything that I'd rather be doing. I was trying to make progress on this vision that I have for my life.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to get a clear vision for your life. And then to have a life by strategy, you have to say, what are you willing to sacrifice to get it? And, you know, I said, well, maybe I'm sacrificing too much or too little. And that argument, you know, you can certainly sell yourself on, you know, well, was that sacrifice worth it? But I definitely think along my journey that whatever goal I had, I was just willing to sacrifice more than the other people that had failed to get to that goal.
Yeah.
Whether that was sleep, whether mm-hmm. that was spending the night with a friend, whether that was going outside to play and especially when I got into junior high and high school, you know, I mowed a lot of grass and washed a lot of cars.
Yeah.
Sold a lot of firewood, hauled a lot of hay. And, you know, it wasn't really the money. It was the goal and the vision that I was trying that was clear and the sacrifice that I was willing to make along the way.
What was that goal and vision when you were, you know, seventh, eighth grade, you know, mowing lawns? And
so I just know this is here because I saw it, but like, this is my journal I always had a goal, you know, some of this stuff you don't want to read, but, definitely don't want to stream it live on Facebook, but some of them, you know, I'd write down my thoughts. I would journal, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember I drew a boat. I drew how much money I saved every time I journaled. So this was the goal. I'll have to come down from the top so you could see it, but that was the goal.
Okay. That's right. A picture of a boat.
Yeah. And I bought that boat, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah. And I bought that boat probably 6 or 7 years later after I drew it, but I had Rolex, you know, it was things that I saw other people have that I wanted. But I wrote down my goals and, you know, I wrote down, here's one right here. So this is my mindset right here. Right. So let me,
and this is eighth grade. You were doing this.
Well, this is 2000 right here. It's dated, right? This is 2000. And so, you know, it says, don't ever stop, help others and do what's right. You will then have everything you dream. Right. But that's at the end of a long, that was my mindset. Right. I wrote a poem, wrong or right is like the blade of a knife. So it was like right or wrong was like the blade of the knife. Life will separate the few who achieve. Why others go party, life pass them by and their dreams remain dreams. It will be them who cry. Remember and stay focused and keep your head clear. And I promise my friends, success will be near. So all of those, and I had that on my desk. And so these people would knock on my window when I first got into real estate, cause I was like 20, 21. They'd be like, hey, we're going down to this place. We're going to Wish. We're going to Candle Room, you know, all these clubs that they would, you know, they'd have to come by my city and my office was right off the highway. And they knew where my office was and the light would be on and I would be there after dark, usually the only one. And, you know, guys, girls, they would knock on my window and they would call me knowing I wasn't answering. And I knew if I answered, I mean, I just knew how to say no. And I knew how to, I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was just, I was driven on that goal. You know, so that's
how you knew what your why was. I mean, I've always said, like, if you learn how to say no, you're saying yes to something bigger, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you were saying no because you were saying yes to your goals and your dreams and what you wanted. And at such a young age, and I think you brought up a really good point earlier, which, you know, I've still trying to figure that out. Like, how does someone develop, or how do you have that inner drive, right? Like, how does somebody have that? Is it something they're born with? Is it something that's developed through just like the hard times that you kind of went through to get there? Like, what really, you know, do you know?
Well, when I moved here, I walked 365 days with my business partner. Almost, you know, it sure felt like that. I don't know a day we missed, but I would always bring up, because of other people in my life that I was trying to help, I would try to figure out why, you know, what may drive. And I think there's things, you know, people are driven by fear, you know, but, you know, like Jimmy Levine in the Defiant Ones with Dr. Dre says, if you can get fear not to stand in front of you, but to push you. Right. And so, you know, there's a lot of things, man. Listen, you know, I think the wrong type of drive is for other people. You know, there's a lot of times when I see other people that they have this identity that other people have about them. So they're driven to really do what everybody else does. So like, well, everybody else did this and I don't want them to judge me for not doing it. So they're, you know, a lot of people, I don't know, maybe it's 50%, 60, 70, but there's a lot of people that do really well. And they passed the test. They got an A on doing exactly what they're told, right? They go to school, they get out, they live the perfect, you know, or I say perfect, you know, they do all those things. They get the 401k, but they don't ever hit their full potential because they didn't stop and say, you know, because it's hard to dream when you're trying to survive. And so when you're young, you're just trying to, you know, you're just trying to cover your basic needs, you know, shelter, food, water. You know how it was when you were trying to get your first apartment.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to get like out of your house and all this stuff. But at some point, the word courage comes into play. That's why I keep saying courage, because courage is the first level of consciousness of where you say, I can, you're taking account of your agency and you say with courage, I can do something about this situation, right? So, you know, when I was in a job, I left, but I had the courage to leave. There was other people that stayed two more years and I had the courage because of the things that were obvious. And, you know, I always ask myself questions. This is the one question I always ask myself. What if, when I worked at a job, I would say, what if I got my boss's 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 job? Meaning the path was clear and it was a guaranteed contract that I was going to. So I remember their names. If I was going to get this guy, you know, at any job, you know, so like, you know, and if, would I be happy with their job? Meaning on this success path, I moved up the ladder. What is their life, the life I want? And if the answer was no, then I was looking for that. I was looking for the person who had the life that at least at that particular time that I wanted. You know, I didn't know better. You know, I started to use that same framework when I'm like, well, that's not what I want. You know, yeah, they got the boat and the car, but you know, they don't have, you know, good relationships or whatever. So I started finding mentors. And I think really when I honed in, it's almost like a magician that he's going to only share, like, he's going to only show a handful of people in his life his tricks. Right. Mm. And so, you know, and when you find that one person, the truth is it is magic. It really is magic, because when someone teaches you a magic trick, you're like, oh, that's easy. I could probably do that. Like, that's what it is they're showing you how to do something. And usually, their reasons. See, like if you watch like TED Talks on how to make a hard decision.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fundamental thing to making a hard decision is finding the reasons. So people, you know, find the reasons not to do something versus doing the adverse, which is a decision theory, right? So how do you make a decision to do something hard? You have to at least stop and say, well, what are the reasons? So what naturally happens is, you know, we're trying to save our way to the top, you know? So like, okay, so you're going, and I was this guy, but you're going to save your every single dollar you make. Well, let's just break down how wealth is really created. You know, how much wealth is created through real estate. It's through the leverage. And in order, let's say it's through investing, whatever it is, I don't care. That's not the point. The point is that whatever your methodology, whosever philosophy and method you're going to adapt and adopt and apply to your life, you know, you have to make sure that that's in alignment with, you know, and congruent with what you're looking for. And then you have to have the courage, you know, so you have to have the courage to ask them questions. You have to have the courage to reach out to them. But I would say that, you know, what you're really doing is you're modeling. And so finding a mentor is someone who gives you a model, and it's the model in which they make decisions. And so when you're over here trying to make a decision, your natural instinct is going to find the reasons not to do it. And if it's money driven, because where you are, your short-term thinking is going to determine your long-term circumstance.
Yeah.
You're not going to look at that investment as, well, I'm going to be more valuable if it doesn't work, because I'm going to be able to say everything I learned along the way. So now your mindset as it relates to progress, to forward momentum, to having the courage is, man, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if they, I'm just not feeling like I should do it. Bullshit. What you should have said is, okay, well, what if this happens and this happens and this happens? I still made a decision. And even if I make that decision 8 times, by the 9th time, I'll find the thing that works. So if in life, everybody knew it was going to take nine whacks at the pinata to get all the candy out, they wouldn't be discouraged when they hit it the 3rd time or the 4th time or the 5th time. But what people do is they think it takes one whack. No, it doesn't. Because with every whack, you're getting a feedback loop, right? You're like, and that feedback loop is now making you the decision mechanisms that are going to, maybe the decision you're going to decide is to stop doing what you're doing. But if you played halfway, you would just be poking at it forever. But now, because you gave it all you got and it didn't work, you moved to the next thing that was going to be the biggest thing you ever did. And so the path to success is through failure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my mentors would say, like, so, and this guy was in Silicon Valley. He was on the cover of like Newsweek, of one of the 4 most influential people that was going to impact the internet. He built a $100 million company. And what he would always say to me, his roommate was the founder of Nest at Michigan State, I believe, Fidel. And so, you know, what he would say to me is like, in Silicon Valley, like, we want you to fail fast, because otherwise you're just going to milk our money, which is our runway of investment.
Yeah.
So we want to. And so I tell people it's way easier to grow fast, but to grow fast, you have to make decisions fast. And so I'm taking what I learned from Mark Chesley, the CTO at Infusionsoft, what I learned from Scott Kleiser, the co-founder of Free 411, you know, what I learned from Clayton Mask, you know, all of these people as mentors, I'm taking and downloading in my mind like an app. What was the lesson? What was the principle? How do I apply it? And so as you collect those, you now have a framework for making decisions. And the sum of your decisions determine where you are today, and they'll determine where you are in the future. So if you're not over there learning, you don't learn. Your computer doesn't learn anything. It's like having AI with no learning mechanism. AI is good because of the feedback loop, right?
Yep, that's right.
And so, you know, you know, Elon Musk was on an interview. It's kind of trending on YouTube right now. And for the first time, I heard him say why he thought AI was bad. And his explanation was totally blew me away. You know, like when you think of his explanation originally, at least I thought of it as like, oh, well, there's going to be robots that kill everybody. And that wasn't what it was. He said, you know, AI will have the ability to create accounts, to post, to imitate themselves like a real human, and organize and influence messages to persuade people to think something's happening or do something, and it'll be, and you would never know it wasn't, because it could create millions and millions of accounts. It can create fake images, millions and millions of fake people who know each other, whose roots are all the way back. AI could go into ancestry.com and make a fake person, like from a social imagery, it could, you know, create a movement, right? What appeared real. And so the point that he was saying is it would have the ability to influence. He said that's what he said on the show is, what if it had the ability to influence? And, you know, it's kind of like the fake news mantra, whether that's true or untrue, it's still a concept of, you know, we're influenced by the stuff that we consume. And so, you know, for me, going back to drive, you know, drive is like, who are the people in your life and what influence are they having on you? And so when I didn't go out, you know, the first thing, when they say that you're the five people around you, no, the five people around you make decisions, good or bad ones. They decide to steal cars. They decide to get a paper route. They decide to smoke. They make decisions. And if you show me the people around you, whether you're doing it now over time, those good or bad decisions are going to eventually rub off on you. I was fortunate that I had a business partner who his decision was buy anything that can make me better. And where he got that, I don't know. But I can tell you, that wasn't my framework, but that was a cheat code, right? Like, you know, like buying a book, buying a course, buying a ticket to a conference. And, you know, if he wouldn't have been around me demonstrating that, Mike, dude, that money in the bank isn't worth more than the education. And, you know, it goes back to Warren Buffett, who says the best investment you can make is in yourself. You know, because he did that over time, I got to the conferences. And guess what the people at the conferences did? They did the same thing. So I got around all these people who invested in themselves. And next thing you know, the closest people to me all go to conferences, right?
Yeah.
And they go to multiple conferences. And so, you know, you start to underline, you know, these different frameworks. And that's why there's so much power in proximity. Hmm. And so living your life by strategy is determining your life team, your mentors, you know, the what things you're willing to sacrifice, getting a clear vision. And you do that by dreaming. Like that's the problem. The problem is that once you start, like, as children, we can dream, right? But as we get older, we have these feedback loops and we start to really start living life by defense, not offense. And so you living life by strategy is like shutting out the current reality and really saying, like, if I had a wish, you know, and it's also taking the negative feedback. It's, you know, in a perfect world, what would, you know, my spouse say is my number one thing holding me back? And what would my spouse say is the number one thing I could do better as a father, as an entrepreneur? What would my mentor say? Like, if you get those feedback loops and they're honest, vulnerable feedback loops, and you have, and you're driven, those feedbacks are just going to make you gain awareness.
Yeah.
And once you have awareness, you're like, you know, like, you know, we get over here in this world and then we create this identity as like, we work hard, we crush it, da da da. And then, you know, and then you have someone in your family that says, yeah, but, you know, you don't ever put the toilet seat down. you run out of here and, you know, you don't even, you know, you don't think about all the shit I have to pick up after you leave, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you're winning over here, but like now your kids are picking up that habit. Right. Mm. And so, you know, you're not showing them the basic discipline, you know, you're not leading, right? And so it's like life by strategy is understanding, like, you know, all those areas of your life. You know, you can't just be winning in finance and losing in fitness. You can't be just winning in fitness but losing in the family department. Yeah, so it's getting a mentor for all of those areas.
And so a separate mentor for each one of those areas who have kind of like mastered that section of their life.
They don't even have to master it. They just have to be congruent in alignment with what the vision you have for yourself.
Yeah.
That's right. Good. And so, you know, if it's a real vision that you really want, that, you know, for whatever reasons you want it, you can want to live off the grid. You can want whatever you want for whatever reasons and belief systems that you have. You don't have to want to be, you know, wealthy. You know, you just have to, you know, the people that are living their life by strategy know what they want and have created a mechanism in their life in order to achieve it, you know, versus settling.
Yeah.
What they get.
That's really good. I love the feedback that you're talking about, like the different people you surround yourself with and asking that question. I think that's really important that a lot of people don't do. They just kind of if they're so driven, you know, I think that's a fault maybe where I lie. Like I'm so driven that I'm just going. And that at times I forget to step back, or not even step back, but just ask along the way, like, hey, you know, give me feedback. I want to learn. I want to know more about what you feel like is right or wrong, or and all that. So I think that's really good.
So let me give you an example. Okay. And I'm just going to show you, I know this is crazy. Hopefully I can show you it in a non too transparent way, but transparent enough to demonstrate the point. So in my phone, I have my wife's top 100 goals, right? So if you look, it's kind of hard to do it. I kind of have to do it this way. But if you look right here, it says top 100 goals in order, right?
Not in order. Yeah.
Not in order. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are 100 of them, right?
That's awesome.
And it's her goals. And that, and you know, we do that. And if you look at when she sent me her first list 10 years ago and the progress, but like, you know, one was to teach our kids to be more organized. There's this like class for manners for boys. And that was important to her, right?
Yeah.
It was like a $500 school to put our boys in, you know, because to her, one of her goals was for her kids to be well-mannered. And so, you know, and they didn't have Puerto Rico on the website as an option. Because when you went and put your credit card in, because it was a school in Texas and their merchant account wouldn't take a Puerto Rican credit card. You know, family pictures, right? Take her daughter to the new Frisco library, right?
Yeah.
So she has 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year goals.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that was amazing for me and my wife, and I told people I would have done this in the beginning was, you know, so before we moved to Puerto Rico, we spent probably 20 hours with an architect designing our dream home. And once they kind of design it this way, they put a, you know, what do they call that? Kind of a street view. There's a word for it, elevation, like how it looked from the street. And so in our first meeting, we drop our kids off at this little place, like a play place. We get there at 10, we leave at 5. The second time we do it again, then they come to the house the third time. And this house is like, you know, she has this room she wants. And when it was done, you know, we had like this, like the process that we went through, I said to her, I wish we would have done this when we got married and took the actual blueprint and framed it. And that should have been behind our bed, like a frame. You know, even if it would have cost $10,000 in architect fees, because once the architect does it, you know, you can build it whenever you want.
Sure. Yeah.
But designing that dream house of where you're going to raise your family and, you know, having that crystal clear vision, that cold plunge, that steam room, that infrared sauna for her occupational therapy room, the theater, you know, the staircase, you know, where the boys and the girl, the, you know, where we're going to have a gym was, you know, all of that stuff and how it flowed. That was a amazing process. But in theory, that same architecture, imagine doing that with your life.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine saying, you know, imagine it's things like, instead of saying like, we're going to do Disney this year. Imagine knowing like when our youngest one is at this age, we're going to do the Disney trip and, or we're going to go to Rome as a family, or maybe me and my wife are going to go here as a couple. And we're going to have, so like when you see like that conversation of dreaming, hey babe, over the next 5 years, if there was no constraints, what would be the blend of our family vacations? And then maybe just the vacations with me and you, if we had our perfect schedule and could do whatever we wanted, what would it look like?
Yeah.
And what would end up being, and then when you looked at that list and said, number one, like, what's the number one and why? Like, well, why don't we put that in the calendar? Right. Like, why don't, I know we should do it now, but why don't we put in the calendar for next November? Right. And why don't we change this and actually get this American Express card? And why don't we go ahead and try to rack up our points for the flights, you know, like just getting the ability to dream and get a vision and get out of your current reality, that creates the drive. The drive is for, you know, the vision of a better life, a better way, you know, whatever that better is for you.
Yeah.
And then believing that, you know, that the reason why you're doing what you do every day has a purpose.
Yeah. 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 I love that. So it's really, you know, one of the things I say is like, your why is bigger than you, you know, it's bigger than just like the selfish desires. It's like, hey, I want to do this for my kids. I want to do this for my wife. I want to do this, you know, for our family and for their kids. And so it just starts getting, it becomes bigger than you. So it's just like, it's almost like wind in your sail to really push you or pull you through, you know, any hard, anything that's hard, because it's worth it.
Yeah. They say when the why is clear, the how is easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like the, you know, it talks about, you know, scripture even talks about he without a vision will perish. Right. So it's like, you need to have a vision. I think people have kind of lost that. And you said that as kids, it's easier to dream and have that ability to, you know, want things, but then all of a sudden you become older and you allow, you said you start living life by like defense, not offense. And like people are just trying to sort of like stay alive, afloat, versus like learning how to dream again. Right. So what would you say to somebody who's kind of in that situation, who has got through life and they got beat up a little bit and they're just kind of surviving and they're not really thriving and living their dreams and going after what they want? And it could be a number of things why. Maybe it's fear or whatever it is, but what would you say to that person who kind of has lost that vision or how to dream?
Well, I first think you're going to have to let go of some stuff, which are some people that, I mean, you like
the sacrifice.
Yeah. So environment is stronger than will.
Sure.
So most people's environment needs to change, right? Like I would say, like, if, you know, if you take somebody, let's say somebody that I cared about, if they were in a bad situation, you know, the best thing, and there was nothing promising, you know, it probably makes sense for them to just move. You know, like, yeah, a big decision and like, well, where do you move? I don't know. You know, like, I'm just saying, maybe there's, you have a passion for something and living in this area puts you more in proximity to a person, a place, a thing, something, you know. Give you an example. Let's say, you know, somebody's overweight and they've been trying and, you know, they try, like, make a big decision and, you know, move close to, you know, maybe a place that has a nice walking park that you could, you know, use easier, less excuses, you know, a person overweight, you know, that, you know, they, it's all accountability, right? Like the thing that, there's a lot of reasons people are overweight. So I'll just give you what's always helped me. Mm-hmm. The number one thing that helped me with, losing weight was throwing things away. And so the day I decided, you know, it was like taking, you know, the things that I shouldn't be consuming, both, you know, adult beverages, candy, anything of that, and throwing it away. But what really changed was when I went to a restaurant and I ordered a steak and I was halfway done and I was okay with throwing it away. Right. But because I was so frugal, you know, I'd want to eat the whole thing. And, you know, and so it's just getting some structure. In the case that you presented about the person, you know, there's a lot of the times where those individuals, they're kind of in a rut. And so you just need to make a major decision. And again, I'm thinking in one scenario, which might not be the case, but let's say somebody was in a bad relationship and they keep going back and forth in this relationship, just move, go to another state, you know, get the hell out of there. You know, unless you just can't find the reasons, and you're scared, but get the courage to, you know, give yourself the biggest thing that you can have, which is, you know, a fresh start, you know. But if it's not required, you know, but maybe you change your phone number. You know, I have a guy that I know that, here in Puerto Rico, I met him here locally and, he started hanging out with me and I started helping him. And one day he came in and said, I changed my number. Hmm. He said every time he'd work out with me at 5 a.m., he would show me his phone. He was like, they call me at 1 a.m, 2 a.m, 12. Every time when I'm going to bed, they say, hey, can you come out tonight? Can you come out tonight? He said, so I changed my phone number.
Nice. Good.
And he smiled, right? But like, yeah. you know, but what he's really trying to do is get out of that environment, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. like, how do you get out of that environment and then get into a better environment? Better environment might be like, you know, joining a gym.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Going to play golf, create more positive environment for yourself. I think at base, you got to change your environment, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, 100%.
And if you can't change your environment, then the second thing you have to do is you have to hyper consume.
Mm.
You have to hyper consume, meaning every free minute that you can, you have to consume positive content. So you almost have to rewire and yourself. And so the explanation I've seen done on stage is they had a clear cylinder of water. It was Darren Hardy. It was one of his old keynotes, the compound effect. And he would go on stage with this water and he would put like literally like a cup of dirt and another cup of dirt and he would stir it and the water would be crystal clear and it would be dirty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then he would take a secondary clean water source and just let it dump in and overflow. And he would just keep talking. And he would just be giving his presentation. And by, you know, 10 minutes through, the water was clear again. And the point is that like when your mind has all of these, because of your environment, because of the people you're around, you have all this, the best thing you can do is just hyper
consume. Yeah.
You know, the right content around, you know, and that content's out there and it's, you know, some of us just don't need that anymore. And I would say that we always need it. Maybe we need it for another area we're neglecting, you know, so maybe you don't need it to go make money, but you need it for, you know, doing this better, right? Fitness, you know, hyper consume content. You can't hyper consume content of people crushing it in their health, you know, where you're watching a video about this guy who's doing some magnetic blanket for alkaline and then this one, and you're just hyper consuming all of this like longevity and health and, you know,
yeah, juicing, yeah.
And then go to your deal and make some chili nachos or something. You know what I mean? It's like, no, hyper consume. And what you're trying to do is, you know, you're trying to teach your AI, your personal AI.
Yeah.
Like
you're
trying to give it the information to process the right decision going forward. And you don't know. You don't know. There could be one thing that resonates, that clicks.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. 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 That's good. Yeah. I love that. So you'd mentioned a couple people that have, you know, mentored you, you've learned from, you know, Dan Kennedy being one, the guy in Silicon Valley. You know, what are some of the other, I know there's been probably a lot of people, but what are some of the ones that really stand out that really took you to the next level and what did they teach you?
Well, I really liked working with Mark Chesley. You know, Jesse Itzler.
Yeah. I don't even know who that is.
Jesse Itzler.
I need to
write that. Jesse Itzler is, married to Sarah Blakely. He does a challenge called the 29-0-29 challenge or something like that. He's started NetJets, co-founder of NetJets. He wrote the book Living with the Seal.
And then Yeah.
So that's Jesse. So he has a little story that resonated with always why you always. He tells a story where he had his water hose up outside and he was playing with this kid and then he went inside and he walked back out and put the hose up and he talks about why you always put the hose up. Right. And, it was, and he has a little thing that he has a thing called your life's resume, which is really actually a lot like Life by Strategy. He came out with that, you know, here probably in the last 3 or 4 years. But it's very congruent. But it's called the Big Ass Life Calendar. And so if you go to, you know, look up Big Ass Life Calendar, it's like this badass calendar for planning your life.
Hmm.
You know, he has just some really good, best keynote I've ever seen. His most recent keynote, he brought it in where he had a DJ on the stage. So as he was doing the keynote, the DJ was putting, mute. It was amazing. It was like keynotes of the future. Right.
It's like entertainment almost. It sounds
like. It was
like.
Amazing. He was telling a story and as videos and songs and, you know, audio, it was like a movie as he told the story. Right. Hmm. It was well orchestrated. But, you know, he's very outside of the box. But at the end of the day, you know, he wrote Living with the Seal, Living with the Monk. And his whole concept is one of the big things that changed me was he says, I didn't come all the way to here just to get here. And what he basically says is in his life, as he was progressing, there was one moment in time that he remembers distinctively where he didn't progress. And anyway, when he got back on track to progressing, he realized that once he had hit that big goal, he didn't set the next goal. And so the whole concept is why you always have to set the next thing, right? So like if you do an ultra marathon, you really need to register for the next one. Are you, you know, you accomplish this big goal and then there's nothing else to push for if that's what you're into, right? So it's we're over here talking about people who aren't achieving, but the real question is, why do people become complacent? You know, what happens when, people, and we've had this talk on our walk, you know, why are people driven, not driven, you know? And, you know, I've met a lot of people who've made a lot of money and, you know, they stop their full potential and they stop producing value. And, you know, they have money at that point, but they still have so much more that they can offer. And so you see people who continue to, you know, excel and, you know, produce massive value for the community through other, you know, other things. And then other people who kind of, you know, go into their
and hoard
all the things that they've acquired and, you know, kind of stated themselves and they don't mentor anybody. They don't give anything back. They don't produce any value for people in the future to the degree that they have the capacity to. And so, it's life is like a set of monkey bars, man. You got to let go of something to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. My daughter was just learning how to do the monkey bars just the other day. So that's cool. Just think about.
Yeah. You have to have the courage to let go.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. She's fearless. I'm excited to see what she does in life. She's going to kill it. She's just unstoppable. It seems like she's just unstoppable. So driven. It's weird to see that at such a young age, like someone like, wow, like me and Megan joke. We're like, man, hopefully she has friends, like, cause she's going to be, she's so competitive already. Like literally she's going to the bathroom and Megan's going at the same time pee. And she's like, stands up and says, me win. I won. Like, it's like you won being fastest. Like, it's hilarious. So, like, yeah, but you're right. I mean, you're having to let go of something to go to the next thing. And I think you're right. You know, so many people have reached that threshold of what they feel like this was where I wanted to be. And then they just kind of settle. Versus like pushing to the next thing, like, hey, what's next? Like what? Because there's so much more. I think there's like almost like a new thing gets deposited inside of you once you reach something, and you can either decide to go for it or you can just kind of let it be. And I actually had this picture in my head. I was at church this last week and I was praying. I was like, God, what do you have for me? And he's like, push everything over. Like it was a picture of my closet. My closet was like kind of full. And he's like, push everything over. And you're going to create a space for something new that I have for you. And I'm like, awesome. And, but he didn't say like, get rid of stuff. He wasn't saying like the stuff you had in there was bad to get make. He's like, just push it over. Like you just don't have that mental picture of like what I can give you. Like, but there, you, because you don't think there's space, but there is. So just push it over. And so, that speaks really well to me. What you're saying is like, hey, you got to go to that next level of what you want. And, you know, let go of stuff back here, you know, to get to this next thing. And it's also going along with you, what you said with the sacrifice. So that's good, man. This is a fun conversation. I'm like taking notes as I'm talking to you.
Heck yeah.
Nice. Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate your time, Michael. You know, Michael's been a mentor to me, a friend, and I'm excited to continue to learn from him. And so, you know, if people are wanting to learn from you or figure out, I mean, we didn't really even talk about some of the stuff that you're doing now. We know you're writing a book, but what's some kind of the focus of what you're, you know, some of the things that you're doing, in your life and business and stuff like that.
Man, just trying to learn how to organize people to create value.
There you go. Yeah. That's awesome.
What I'm trying to do. Cool. Organize people to create value. How do I create more opportunity? How do I be in the business for creating opportunity for people and organizing people to create value in exchange for opportunity? Those are the principles. And so You know, you have to be able to create opportunity. You have to be able to organize people. And the opportunity that you're creating for people has to create value for other people.
Yeah. And
that at the core is, you know, what I'm trying to do at scale.
Nice. Nice. So if people are wanting to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
And the best thing is just check me out on YouTube. I think it's youtube.com/Michael Reese.
Yeah, I just threw up the link actually as well. So it's just literally just type in Michael Reese on YouTube, or you can click this link and go check him out and see, you know, some of the great stuff that he's doing and how he's organizing people to create. I can't even repeat what you said. I have to go back and listen.
Boy, I stole it from Elon Musk, but you know, building a great business is just organizing people to create value. And I understand that. And so, you know, organizing people is one set of skills, and you know, value creation is a second. And how do you do both?
It's good. Got me over here thinking. Awesome, Michael. Well, appreciate your time. Go ahead and check out the show. Go ahead and check out Michael and what he's doing. Check him out on YouTube. And looking forward to dropping the show. It's going to be a lot of fun for people to listen to.
Let's go.
Let's appreciate go. It, absolutely, man. Bye. Bye. Yeah. Cool, man.
All right, nice bro. Yes, sir.